Good grief. Question everything. Why?
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt. Welcome back to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast. This is episode number 2.
We're grateful for your listenership. It looks like last week's podcast got dispersed pretty well. So, moving forward, let's talk about what's new. What's new with our work? What's new with our lives? We'll have Amy start with that.
I am still working on the steps, doing free writes, detailed free writes for each individual one. And yesterday I was excited for some of the stuff I'm working on with step 9. Step 9 is show up. The step is broad for a reason. The steps are not mathematical or meant to be definitive. Rather, they are tools to provide a foundation for individuals to build upon. What does it mean to show up? For me, I take it as a reminder that showing up matters because I matter. It's easy to skip out on an event because we feel our presence won't make a difference. That said, I want to show up fully present. Sometimes it is a literal matter of showing up. Sometimes we show up to help a friend when we don't feel up to it. Yet we also need to show up for ourselves, which I believe is closely related to step 7. Step 7, for those of you who do not know, is a step about taking breaks. When I don't want to go to a march or a volunteer opportunity, I ask myself why. Is it because I'd rather do something else, or am I in need of self-care? People sometimes believe self-care is selfish, but many of those folks are inadvertently selfish because they don't take care of themselves. They don't check in. So they're living a life of expectations likely passed down from someone else. One of the greatest gifts my education provided was my ability to think for myself. Becoming critically conscious is a painful and isolating experience. There's a reason so many resist it. It also brings with it a freedom that has enriched my life, making it more colorful and meaningful than I could have ever imagined. In Skole Yoga, which is where I was trained to be a yoga teacher, we design our classes so they are accessible to beginners, and yet there's a part of class that is meant for even the fittest person to fail. This means you will have to come out of the pose at least once, because at some point your body will fall. There are 2 reasons we do this. One is it forces you to practice getting back into a pose, getting back up after you fall. It also familiarizes ourselves with our edge. It's not fun. At first, I hated it. I felt embarrassed to come out of a pose countless times while others held it longer. But the point isn't about how long you can hold it. It's about learning your limits. Am I coming out of a pose because it's unpleasant, or does my body need a break? In the beginning, I didn't know the difference and definitely came out too early, while other times holding poses too long to the point of hurting myself. It doesn't ever turn into an exact science. It does, however, help me learn to recognize my edge and listen to my body more. Why does this relate to showing up? It relates to showing up because intention matters, and showing up can be unhealthy if we lose sight of step 7 about taking break.
It seems that we're sort of lacking that as a culture. You know, we do things, we go through our day-to-day without a sort of an intention, without checking in and seeing why we're doing these things. Like, for me, it seems like a lot of people are kind of asleep at the wheel. They do these sort of routines. I think that we need to take a moment or several moments and check in with ourselves and see what our intentions are. What do we want? I wrote a blog post this last week that I shared about truth, and I asked a bunch of questions about who do you want to be. You know, when you get to be 85 or 90, if you get to live that long, and you're looking back at your life, you know, who do you want to be remembered as? Additionally, are you living that way now? Are you living consistent with the ways that you want to be viewed?
Intention does matter, and that is kind of countercultural. I mean, you know, we hear quotes like the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? And it's in part because intention alone is not enough, but it's also a good checkpoint. And I had the honor and privilege of spending a week at Remuda Ranch, which is a wonderful treatment facility for eating disorders in Phoenix. Visiting a family member there, I attended a week of extensive family therapy. And one of the main points that kept coming up was intention. why are you doing what you're doing? Are you distracting yourself in an unhealthy way? Is something bothering you? And really, when you're looking at intention, for me, it's about self-awareness. And most of us have not been taught self-awareness. That's personally why I love yoga. It is about paying attention without judgment, which was very freeing for me, because everything about my intentions was so clouded in what I thought I should be doing, what I should be feeling. And I didn't actually know how to sit with the unpleasant parts of myself. And I don't know that that ever gets easier. It's still not fun, but when you get practice at doing it, it becomes a little less daunting. And I don't think we have a lot of spaces for us to sit down and really do an honest check of what's my intention. Why am I giving this person a gift? Do I have any expectation associated with it? Or am I feeling insecure about something and I want to buy their love or their affection? Or am I giving them a gift just to say thank you? Just sorts of checkpoints like that. Why am I choosing to have a beer right now? Is it because I want to be social? It's fun, it tastes good, or am I doing it because I don't want to feel something? And those are the sort of answers that no one can answer for you. Laura, what's on your heart this week?
What I wanted to share is that I've been listening to Brené Brown's new episode on Being. It's called Strong Back, Soft Front, Wild Heart. And she's talking a lot about connection and what it means to be connected to other people. And she asserts that we require some amount of spirituality in order to be connected to others. And she says, I believe it cuts across faith and denomination and belief system. And by spirituality, I mean the deeply held belief that we're inextricably connected to each other by something greater than us. And that thing that's greater than us is rooted in love and compassion. That there's something bigger than us and we are connected to each other in a way that cannot be severed. And so later in the episode, she talks about how we're very separated right now, or we're under the illusion that we're separated. And so she encourages us to move closer to people, to ask intriguing questions so we get to know them and we can find that part where we're linked through love and compassion. And so she says, the first practice of true belonging is people are hard to hate close up. Move in. So when you're struggling with someone, it's easier to hate than it is to move in, to get curious, to get closer, to ask questions about that person. It's easier to hate than it is to get to know someone and let your guard down and be vulnerable. So I was really moved by that.
And the parts that have stuck with me, we already were talking about, Laura, which is the idea that Brené Brown says something along the lines of, it's so much easier for people to cause pain than it is for them to feel their own pain. That really sticks with me. I personally can think of times when I've caused others pain, and it's almost always when I'm feeling pain or trying to avoid feeling pain. But I would say the average person doesn't actually want to hurt people, and that the desire to hurt comes from somewhere else, an insecurity. I'm currently reading, as I mentioned last week, Ernest Becker, Escape from Evil. And Becker talks a lot about how we often cause evil in our attempt to escape from it. Our death anxiety makes us feel vulnerable, and so we want to feel powerful, and that need to feel powerful comes from fear.
And one of the phrases I've learned in my life along the way is that hurt people hurt people.
I think when we do hurt people, I don't know that many of us ever go out thinking, I want to hurt someone today, but for whatever reason we feel vulnerable, defensive, we say something we don't mean. And in those times, then I have to sit with myself and own the fact that I strayed from my ideal version of myself. And then that causes a pain that distracts me from whatever I was numbing from the first place. To me, this gets into sort of existential ideas, existential grief. And I've also been researching, this may seem unrelated, but I've been trying to research the difference between feelings and emotions. And what's been fascinating about my research is people say so confidently the difference between one and the other, but there is some overlap. And what I gathered was that feelings are our perceptions about our emotions. Emotions are natural internal experiences, and feelings are also internal, but they're mixed with our subconscious perception and association.
Wow.
And so in understanding that, for me, I want to know, what is the emotion that is causing me this discomfort? And to be honest, I don't know that every time there's a concrete answer. And for someone like me who wants something definitive to explain everything, that's hard. That's hard to sit with. That sometimes there's just this existential grief that I don't know what to do with. And sometimes it manifests in different ways in my life, sometimes in ways I'm not proud of. And how do I use those moments to have compassion for people who hurt me? How do I remember those times where I've made mistakes, where I've said things I regret, or things like that? Which reminds me, I actually, Facebook has that, you know, that memory timeline thing. And a status I posted a couple years ago came up. So it's from April 2015, not long after the death of Freddie Gray had just happened in Baltimore. The status says, "What do I do when I'm overwhelmed with life and feel a wide range of emotion? 1, make a great mix of moving and grooving music while drinking beer. 2, clean apartment while dancing to the great mix, preferably while still drinking beer. 3, make a Facebook status as a gesture of solidarity and apology for those of my friends posting courageous and necessary political statuses which I don't feel rooted or strong enough to deal with right now. 4, post said status as an act of activism, even though some friends will criticize my lack of a serious status as the result of my middle-class luxury. 5, remember that self-care is not a luxury. I can't make a difference and help take care of the world if I don't know how to take care of myself. In other words, I make sure my oxygen mask is secure before I help others figure theirs out, because otherwise I might pass out and or die. 6, feel gratitude for my ability to care for myself, a skill I've only developed in recent years. 7, remember the talk I heard when I lived with nuns by the legendary activist Father John Deere, where he talked about how to sustain yourself as an activist for the lifelong journey, a dialogue so many of us are afraid to have because we base our activism in shame and shoulds instead of faith in greater good, grounded in realistic inventory of what that even means. 8, believe in love, capital L love, and appreciate Facebook as a place for beautiful and authentic dialogues, even though sometimes I get discouraged by the cruel and judgmental interactions I see. 9, understand that the cruel and judgmental interactions on Facebook I see are usually what happen when an ego is threatened, which makes a person feel the need to save face. Unfortunately, sometimes saving face looks like cruelty. 10, remember how many times my ego has been threatened where I resorted to cheap tactics to save face. I don't remember this to make an excuse for others. I remember this because it is this knowledge that protects me from hate when I see hurtful conversations on Facebook. This is how I both survive and thrive depending on the day. And I hashtagged faith, love, healing, compassion, and understanding." So I wrote that status because at the time I was getting ready to graduate with my MFA. I was working on a thesis. I was incredibly stressed and just on edge, not feeling stable. I have a history of depression. And because of that, self-care for me is not a luxury. When I don't focus on self-care, I can fall into instability pretty quickly. And I was really struggling accepting that because I was seeing all these posts from my activist friends, and a lot of them were saying things like, if you're not commenting, that's your privilege, which I do agree with. I do agree it's a privilege not to be able to discuss it. But I also would argue that it can be a privilege to discuss it because you might not have the ability, the emotional stability at the time to be able to do so. And so I created this status to remind myself especially, but as well as others, that these Facebook interactions do matter. And at the same time, we can't base our activism or really anything in shame. And that's where Brené Brown has been incredibly helpful for me, is to see how shame, they call it the master emotion for a reason. It controls so much of our behavior. And once you start to understand your own shame and how it can trigger you to behave in ways that don't line up with your values, and vice versa, when you see someone responding in a way that you don't feel okay about, you can almost always identify shame somewhere. And I think we all can agree shame is an emotion that is very unpleasant. None of us want to feel. It's painful. And so that helps me have compassion for people, even while they're saying things that make me feel rage. And that's where Brené Brown's quote from this last On Being about it's so much easier for people to cause pain than it is for them to feel their own pain really comes in when you're looking at people saying hurtful things.
We highly recommend that you check out the podcast On Being, specifically Brené Brown's newest episode, and it's called Strong Back, Soft Front, Wild Heart. We think that there's a lot there. It's a rich episode, so go ahead and check it out.
We'd love to hear questions from our listeners. You can send them to goodgriever@gmail.com. And also, you can now subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, which means when we release it every week, you'll get a reminder that a new one's out. You'll be able to listen to the most recent one that way. So we'd encourage you to follow us on iTunes.
Yes, that is true. I'd also like to take a minute and thank our patrons, Serena, Laura, Kindy, and Jackie, Justin, Mackenzie, Caleb, and Emmeline. Thank you so much for your support. And if you're listening to this and you like what we're doing, you can go ahead and go to our Patreon page, and I'll link it in the show notes for you. But you can go ahead and become our newest patron.
And we can't do it without you all, so thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts.
Stay tuned. Next week, we'll come back at you with some more information. Thanks for listening.
We appreciate y'all listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.